Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Agriculture in Brazil has the upper hand. They have a lot of influence on both sides.
Former chief ag negotiator at the U.S. Trade Representative, Greg Dowd.
What I think you've seen in Brazil as a result of this uncertainty and the lack of enforcement of whatever laws they have down there on the frontier is that it's been the Wild West, and there's been a lot of effort to open up additional farmland on the frontier in Brazil. And so the question is, once that is settled down and they know more who's going to be in charge going forward, is there a clamp down on that? I think that's the question. So when you have this type of uncertainty, that frees folks up to just kind of go crazy in that part of the world. And we've certainly seen that based upon the intelligence that I've seen.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Before the Thanksgiving holiday, Ranking Member Bozeman and I held the first in a series of hearings here in D.C. focused on our shared goal, passing another bipartisan farm bill.
Chairwoman of the Senate Ag Committee, Debbie Stabenow.
With respect to the research title, I look forward to working with Senator Booker and Senator Braun, who are the chair and ranking members of the subcommittee, and with every member of this committee. And our agenda today is a topic of great importance: agriculture research, extension, and education. We can't have a thriving economy if we don't make things and grow things. And agriculture research helps us do just that. Just last month, the United Nations estimated that the world population surpassed 8 billion people. That's 8 billion people who need access to safe, nutritious, and affordable food. Innovation through agricultural research is central to global food security.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman from Arkansas.
As Senator Stabenow just said, last month the world population reached 8 billion people, and according to most projections, we were out at our next billion people in the next 15 years. Our growing population will need access to affordable and high-quality grains, oils, and proteins, and the American farmer is well-positioned to meet this demand due to our continued investments in our academic institutions and agricultural research. As we begin drafting the new farm bill, our priorities must take into consideration what is happening on the international stage. The world has been teetering on the brink of a massive food crisis for some time now. The Russian conflict in Ukraine, two grain exporting countries whose products feed some of the most vulnerable people in the world, has added fuel to that fire. The misguided government policies by some global leaders are only making matters worse. What happened in Sri Lanka is a perfect example. Sri Lanka was a self-sufficient for most dietary staples until its leadership instituted a ban on synthetic fertilizer and mandated an organics-only approach. A third of Sri Lanka's farmable land went fallow, food prices soared, and a man-made hunger crisis was created as a result. While Sri Lanka's plight was largely brought about by its own leadership's short-sighted decisions, it's important that we learn the right lessons from that catastrophe. This is what makes the research title of the Farm Bill so very, very important. Innovation is the answer to the challenge of feeding our growing population, as well as giving our farmers and ranchers the ability to help meet the needs of an ever-changing global dynamic. According to the USDA's Economic Research Service, U.S. farmers produce three times as much agriculture output today as they did in 1950, while total inputs have remained virtually unchanged. It's our job to continue these advancements by providing the American agricultural research enterprise with the resources and the infrastructure that they need to do it. The Farm Bill is the most important and consistent opportunity to invest in agricultural research and extension. From programs that build capacity at our nation's land-grant institutions to world-renowned competitive grant programs such as the Agriculture and Food Research Initiative, this important title of the Farm Bill provides a broad array of authority and investment in agricultural research.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Drought has caused a lot of problems in my home state of Utah.
Earlier this year at a Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee hearing, Senator Mike Lee from Utah.
This is happening in some other places, but to a pretty acute degree in Utah. Ranchers are delaying putting livestock on the range. Growth has, of course, been impacted by water uncertainty, and a lot of local economies are being stretched thin by virtue of their inability to access some Bureau assets like Lake Powell. I really appreciate some of the recent actions, decisions made by the Bureau of Reclamation to boost water levels at Lake Powell, including, of course, the release of 500,000 acre-feet from Flaming Gorge Reservoir and the withholding of an additional 480,000 acre-feet from release downriver from Lake Powell.
Lee has a question or two for the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, Camille Tootin.
What can you tell me about the Bureau's priorities moving forward as they relate to water levels at Lake Powell?
Thank you, Senator, and good morning. We have a great partnership with the state of Utah. Gene Shockroff is one of the principals we work in the with the basin states. What we're prioritizing right now is really short term. What actions to make up that 2 to 4 million acre feet in the basin to help protect Lake Mead and Lake Powell? Because all of the actions that you mentioned, the nearly 1 million acre feet that we did this year, buys us a year. And we cannot be in the same place next year where we're talking about critical levels to protect power pool. So we are spending significant amount of time. This is the priority for us between the next 60 days to figure out a plan to close that gap.
Right.
Another member of the committee from Maine, Senator Angus King.
This is a cycle. And I found a very interesting chart that shows the water situation in the West over the last 1,200 years. And what it shows is up and down. And we are at the second lowest point that we've been. The last one was around 1,500. Interestingly, the West was settled and developed during a period of relative high water. And we're now in a situation where we're at this low point. One of the questions is, will the low point, historically, these drought periods lasted about 20 years. The question is the climate change effect going to make it a much more permanent kind of situation? Second observation is that the amount of water in the world is constant. It never changes, hasn't changed since the dinosaurs. The question is, where is it? Unfortunately, right now, it's in a lot of places where it doesn't do you any good. In Greenland, I've flown over Greenland in a helicopter and seen the enormous amount of water. In one day last summer, 8 billion tons of Greenland melted. That's enough to cover Florida in 2 inches of water. And the question is, how do we move water? And Senator Lankford asked the interesting question about pipelines. Now, obviously, a pipeline from Greenland isn't possible, but from other sections of the country, I think that's something that needs to be discussed. It's not something we've ever thought about before, but we have pipelines for oil and gas, and we do have, in some areas, huge pipelines for transferring water, for example, in New York State down to the city. Desalinization, we have to talk about. All that water in Greenland is fresh water that's going into the ocean.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
While the proposed clearing model by FTX is limited in a select few cryptocurrency contracts, we must consider the potential of this model to expand into other derivatives markets and adopted in some form by other clearinghouses.
With the collapse of FTX, this was actually earlier in the year, House Ag Committee hearing, Chairman David Scott.
Further, I am greatly concerned, and this worries me, about the potential of this proposal to upset international agreements that the CFTC and this committee have worked so hard to preserve, which have deemed our current clearing structure and regulations equivalent to EU and UK rules, affording us derivatives clearing organizations the ability to provide clearing services in their markets.
Testifying on that day before the House Ag Committee, Terry Duffy, CEO of the CME Group.
As you know better than anyone, Chairman Scott, you and this committee have spent enormous time, you mentioned it in your opening remarks, and energy defending the CFTC standards and regulatory oversight as equal to or better than any other jurisdiction in the world. If, in fact, the CFTC decides to approve a rushed and ill-conceived proposal, we believe the hard-won cross-border equivalence agreement that you refer to could come under question. Just a few weeks ago, sir, a senior European Central Bank official warned, and I quote, "The crypto market is now larger than the subprime mortgage market was when it triggered the global financial crisis." To put this into context, the subprime mortgage market was at $1.8 trillion in 2008. Today, the cryptocurrency value is north of $1.8 trillion and growing. The stakes are extremely high. Exempting FTX from a well-established U.S. clearing rules can undermine confidence in our regulatory regime. Therefore, I applaud you, Mr. Chairman, and this committee for holding this hearing today. Your oversight of the derivatives marketplace structure is critical to ensuring sound public policy.
Duffy also added,
"The gentleman at the end of the table said that 90% of the crypto market is going overseas. I would assure you that 90% of the losses are also going overseas with them. And that's not a bad thing from our perspective of our participants being protected from this. Listen, these asset classes are completely different. And I'm not here to discuss the value of crypto one way or another. I think what's important is the structure that they operate under. The proposal as put forth is fraught with dangers. The traditional clearing model that we deploy at CME Group is something that we are passionate about. And the gentleman referred to the derivatives industry cratering in 2008 and what caused that. I assure you it wasn't listed derivatives industry. It was levered bilateral derivatives that caused that collapse. So the risk associated with these products, if not properly regulated, could be catastrophic, not only for the risk of their products, but other products that this application could be applied to, especially every asset class that CME trades. So I have grave concerns. I could talk for hours on this topic, Mr. Chairman. I'll reserve my time, but I think as you deploy this against other asset classes, that's where the real risks come in.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today to discuss the state of USDA's research, education, and economics mission area, which includes NIFA, ARS, ERS, NAS, and the Office of the Chief Scientist.
Dr. Shavonda Jacobs-Young is Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics at USDA.
The success of the REE mission area is rooted in partnerships. Partnerships with technical assistance providers that give producers the tools they need to adapt as they feed the world. Partnerships with institutions to advance agricultural innovation and cultivate the next generation of agricultural leaders. And partnerships with Congress to ensure that decision makers have the tools they need to support farmers and ranchers across the country. Agricultural research often has a less told story, but we live and reap the benefits of it every single day. The impacts of this research shape the way we eat, clothe ourselves, and adapt to a changing climate. For example, in Kansas, NAS collects winter wheat data, data that's so important to our producers. ARS conducts research on grain quality and also breeds crops for genetic solutions to damaging stresses like leaf and stem rust and fusarium head blight. This research helps producers make informed decisions for their operations. Production agriculture requires constant innovation and adaptation as farmers and ranchers pursue climate-smart solutions to extreme weather, as rural businesses seek new markets, and as underserved communities seek trusted partners to tackle systemic issues. Access to information and new technologies underpins each of these objectives, and when appropriately resourced, REE is well-positioned to be a partner in providing timely research, data, training, extension services, and economic analysis to support informed decision making. The U.S. has a long track record of making investments in research that pays off for farmers and our economy. Between 1948 and 2019, total agricultural output in the United States grew by 142%. This rise cannot be attributed to increases in agricultural land or labor. Both inputs declined over this period, but stem instead from the adoption of a whole suite of publicly funded innovations in crop and livestock breeding, nutrient use, pest management, and farm and field management. These new practices have yielded significant dividends. ERS found that public agriculture research and development investments from 1900 to 2011 generated, on average, $20 in benefits to the U.S. economy for every $1 of spending. Yet federal investments in agriculture research have declined by a third in the past two decades, falling far behind our international partners. Once the world's leader, the United States now trails far behind other major nations in public agricultural research investments. This decline in investments means we are missing critical opportunities to capitalize on the powerful potential of our world-class scientists to conduct the type of high-risk, high-reward research necessary to meet the overlapping and rapidly emerging challenges our farmers face. The United States, through USDA, can once again lead in discovering and circulating solutions to global agriculture and natural resource challenges through highly responsive, transdisciplinary, and convergent research. That's why I'm pleased that President Biden and Secretary Vilsack are strongly committed to supporting federal agricultural research, development, and deployment, which will define innovation for decades to come.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm very much in the 8-plus range of concern, and that's for a number of reasons.
Looking at the extended forecast and weather trends, Matt Makins with MakinsWeather.com.
The first and foremost is that we have data that you can look at tree rings, for an example, and sometimes people scoff at that, but you can really look at a tree ring database and go back in time and find periods of substantial droughts that impacted a lot of the country. And in the drought we are in now, for a multi-decadal drought, you have to go back a long, long time, hundreds and hundreds of years, to find a drought as expansive as this one. So that's one concern there. And that's kind of the data geek in me speaking out. But number two comes into play when, let's take last year for an example, and producers across the western U.S. were scrambling to find enough hay or alfalfa. They started transporting it. I've got a buddy in Wellington, Colorado, northern Colorado. He was selling to producers well west, and the transportation costs, I don't know how they broke even on that, but they were getting a supply. And now let's take that problem and go into this year. And now we've expanded hay losses or alfalfa well into the plains. So if you're a producer across the western U.S., gas prices, you're not going to break even. You're going to lose a lot of money by trying to get to that nearest location for quality hay and take it back home. And I think for me, that's the biggest reason I score an 8+ on this current drought is, there's not enough relief. We're scrambling multi-states to try to supplement somebody, 2,000 miles away on the other side of the country. And we're all in this in the same boat. It's not just one region. It's the whole country trying to help each other out and recover. And Mother Nature isn't on our side just yet.
Makins is a former TV meteorologist, now works for Cattle Facts, NCBA, and
every week, biweekly or so, I'll be with Cattleman to Cattleman. It's the NCBA's television show, which airs on RFD TV. A lot of folks are finding they're not getting that channel anymore. So on my website, I put those forecasts on there, and they can be, something timely, like a big event. Like the most recent one was talking about how historically wet New Mexico was in June. And then it talks about the July forecast. But those kind of things, I put those video links on my page. I also put any radio or podcast interviews that I've done on the page. And so maybe you're interested about Canadian weather because the prairies, or you have property up north or something. You can find that information there too. And some of the newest interest is in a product, an insurance product known as PRF. PRF insurance protects your pastures, rangeland, and forage against drought situations. And that's been picking up some traction as folks are making a lot of money in these drought situations by insuring against the drought. So you can also find information on that too. Anything weather, anything to help a producer, a grower, anything like that, I'm there to help. So my contact information is there on the page. And I try to keep it up to date with other companies that I'm working with to see if maybe kind of, you know, what my niche is doing might be able to help somebody else's. So all that kind of company information is on that website also.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The U.S. is a global leader in capital and derivatives markets, enabling participants to hedge risk and manage their businesses. Throughout the market's history, there have been new and innovative technology-based ideas promising multiple efficiencies.
A hearing earlier this year by the House Ag Committee considering FTX. Chris Edmonds with ICE.
ICE has a robust history of innovation. However, the adoption of new technology and processes comes with the potential risk for unintended consequences. Innovation cannot supersede the primary functions of futures markets for price discovery and hedging. As articulated by the leadership at FTX, the company's technology risk management processes and proposed regulatory framework have been constructed to revolutionize clearing and address purported issues with the current offerings. ICE is fully supportive of using new technology to deliver more efficient markets, but as policymakers examine this application, they must remain mindful of the risk. As this committee is aware, years ago, executives from Enron stood in these halls before regulators offering new ideas as to how markets should operate. Under the current system codified by the Dodd-Frank Act, separately capitalized, governed, and regulated clearing organizations manage settlement of financial transactions executed by market participants, typically via regulated clearing members. All of these participants serve important checks in the system against excessive leverage, new products that are not well tested or appropriate for widespread use, and the introduction of unexpected counterparty risk. ICE believes these independent stakeholders provide significant benefits to helping deliver market consensus. Regulated clearinghouses working in conjunction with regulated exchanges, and in most cases, market intermediaries, increase stakeholder confidence in fair markets, transparent pricing, and fully understood settlement processes. FTX plays a leading role in the markets for digital assets, and regulatory oversight will help lead to decision-making and risk management practices that are balanced. However, we do have concerns with the approach FTX has proposed with this application. Rather than following global guidelines and existing regulations, FTX has requested a new set of rules not currently compliant with CFTC regulations and global standards, and potentially sets dangerous precedents. FTX's application raises significant questions around risk management, financial resources, investors' protections, and the collection and safeguarding of margin on non-intermediated clearing model that today has significant participation. ICE recommends the committee explore the risks raised by us and others with the application and the potential market implications. Given my 25 years of experience in these markets, I am confident no member of this committee wants to learn of constituents losing their hedge protection because the market moved against them at 3 a.m. on a Saturday morning. The current system is a pay-as-you-go system, whereas the FTX application is a go-as-you-pay service, meaning participants automatically lose their position if the market moves against them without the ability to bolster their stake with additional margin. The upshot of these model differences has the potential to impact users of future markets significantly and detrimentally. This committee should continue its globally recognized leadership in market structure when evaluating the proposal. Approval in its current form may lead other jurisdictions to challenge the pragmatic, principle-based approach the CFTC has championed. ICE has embraced competition from our founding, and we do not believe there is a single model for clearing that is appropriate for all products and markets. ICE operates traditional intermediated clearing for futures exchanges and over-the-counter derivative markets, as well as non-intermediated clearing for certain energy products used by commercial and institutional market participants. In all cases, ICE clearinghouses are compliant with global regulatory standards and CFTC rules as written today, and did not require new CFTC rulebooks to be successful.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
If you're a farmer who only sold $100 worth of products this year, you still have contributed to what USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer calls a
really good year,
a record large income year for the farm sector in 2022. But of course, everybody's wondering, how in the world can you top this amazing year for farm profits? And Seth Meyer says he's also wondering about that.
We've already seen interest expenses rising significantly year over year. You know, we look at overall costs, and costs are rising. Where are commodity prices going to head? We looked at what was a really good trade forecast, but perhaps just a little bit of weakening demand in 2023.
USDA now projects 2023 ag exports to drop below this year by 3%. Meanwhile,
my hope here is that we continue to see solid commodity prices and that we see some moderation in growth of those input prices so that we can maintain some of this strength on the farmer's balance sheet.
This is Gary Crawford, Washington.